All right, before we kick off this episode, a quick disclosure that we will be talking about some matters of a sexual nature, so listener discretion is advised. Sex has always had its share of misinformation, even as it relates to some medical conditions, like epilepsy, coitus brevis, epilepsia est. Sex is a brief seizure. That's not my quote. That actually comes from the influential and the very well-known, some consider him to be one of the fathers of medicine, Galen, the Greek physician and philosopher back in the Roman Empire. Once again, that's coitus brevis, epilepsia est. Sex is a brief seizure. Then, in the 18th and 19th century, some physicians, including renowned and published authors back at that time, like Samuel Auguste and Edward Skiefking, argued that excessive masturbation could cause epilepsy. At that time, castration and clitorectomy actually was advocated as a way to control severe epilepsy. Well, thankfully, we've moved on from that terrible idea and that terrible recommendation, because obviously that's way wrong. Now we know a lot more about epilepsy and even how it relates to sexual behavior. Yep, thankfully, we now all get that sex does not cause epilepsy. However, sexual release with orgasm and seizure-like activity are indeed similar, not just in outward phenotype and expression, but also biochemically and neurologically. Can orgasm actually trigger epilepsy? And is the reverse possible? Can some seizures give orgasm-like effects? And how is PNES related to all of this? Well, we're going to talk about this fascinating clinical conundrum in this episode. Well, I've said it many, many times. If you're uncomfortable with the topic of SEX, then you probably shouldn't do women's health care. My goodness, everything we do revolves around sex, vaginal discharge, STIs, HPV, arousal disorders, and it goes down the line. And unfortunately, yes, even sexual assault. So I'm very thankful for our SANEs, our sexual assault nurse examiners, who do a wonderful job, are trained for that, and can have time with the patient in that terrible, distressing situation. But yeah, there's weird stuff out there with sex. As always, we get ideas for this episode based on our real-world encounters. And of course, we will use no patient identifiers. But the whole reason we're doing this is because I was so intrigued by this real patient encounter that Brittany, our fantastic PA, brought to me on a real patient. So guys, whenever you hear or you see one of our topics, when you first look at it, you're like, I'm never going to see that. That is just too weird. It's just so random. I'm not going to see that. Like orgasm gave me a seizure. Trust me, it's out there. The same thing that we mentioned for our fundal accreta in Imprimer Gravida. I mean, if you read that, you're like, come on, man. I'm never going to see that. No, one of our Facebook and podcast family members send me that message, as I said in another episode, like, man, this thing happened to me. So it is out there. In Brittany's case, she said, hey, Dr. Chapa, is this a thing? I mean, does orgasm, can that give you a seizure? I said, ooh, I'm intrigued. Tell me more. And so she said, well, this young patient, you know, college age female, no medical issues. It's not a substance issue. Had intercourse, thankfully had an orgasm. I say thankfully because sometimes that doesn't happen because the dude's in his own world. I mean, can I get a witness? I mean, let's say what it is. But, you know, she did have her release. And then according to the patient's report and what her partner said, her male partner said, was she kind of, you know, lost consciousness and started having these weird kind of convulsions. Now, the partner has a family member who has epilepsy. So you can view that one of two ways. One is he totally knows what he's talking about because he may have seen that in another person, in a family member. And or you could go, well, that's a totally a non-objective observer because he's biased from his own background, right? So truth is, this was the first time it happened. Nobody knows. She does not have a history of epilepsy. So the question raised to me was, is this real? Can sex, specifically orgasm, can that give you seizure-like activity? So we're going to talk about it because when your first thought is, are you sure was that a seizure? I mean, was that really a seizure? And that was my question as well. And we're going to talk about all this in this episode. There's a variety of things that can be kind of freaky with orgasmic activity, including a really freaky orgasm. And that has nothing to do with seizures, it's just a really good orgasm. Because it's amazing how much we've learned about orgasm, both in the biochemical and the hormonal sense, and at the neuronal level. The amount of neurons that are firing in the brain with orgasmic release is pretty remarkable. And we're going to talk about that in this episode, because that actually has been looked at with functional MRIs. Yeah. Think about that project, and we're going to talk about it. All to say is this is not obscure, it's not weird, it's not trying to be creepy, although on first thought, when I turned this into the team, I'm like, I want to do an episode about sex and seizures. They're like, oh my God, why? Because we're in women's health and stuff is out there. And so I want to be very clear, because there's a couple of camps here as we go through the data. One is, what we don't want to do is go, that wasn't a seizure, you're nuts, you just had a really strong orgasm, and good for you, and be done with it. And ignore her complaint somehow, because you don't want to do that. At the same time, you don't want to go, oh my goodness, that's just horrible. Here's your Keppra, or here's your Lamictal, and take this daily. Wait a minute, that's overkill. So the answer is somewhere in the middle, and that's what we're going to get to in this episode. We're going to go through some of the data here, and as I lay this out, no, there's no huge databases. These are largely underreported because patients don't want to talk about it, even those with epilepsy. And so most of these have been through case reports and as a conglomerate of a case report, which we'll present here as well. But there's not huge evidence here. Even in the National Epilepsy Foundation, the International League Against Epilepsy, all of these societies we'll talk about here in a minute. And even the CDC is like, I don't know, sex with seizure, maybe, sure, why not? But it's super rare. And it's a little controversial, okay? This idea of orgasmic release. So it's not really a sex thing. If you notice our title, it doesn't say sex. It says orgasm, because this is orgasm of any type, meaning self-inflicted or partner participated. All right. So it's not really sex. It's the orgasm itself. But it's controversial because there's a lot of confounding things that can get into this, okay, that seem independent, and they are, and they're also interrelated. My goodness, that's why we said it's a clinical conundrum. So I'm going to lay out all of this evidence here in a minute. But the whole purpose of getting into this background, disclosure of why we are doing this topic is that stuff is out there. It's weird. And don't brush away a patient just because you've never heard of it. And at the same time, don't overdiagnose, because you don't want to do that either, because that will stick with her forever. And so this episode, we're going to try to dive through this, dissect the minutia, and kind of give us a working plan here on what to do. Now, remember, in our case snapshot here that we're presenting, our little podcast case report, this was a young reproductive age female, never had happened previously. Okay, so let me just tell you what we did, and just to knock that out in case you're wondering, to not leave anybody on the hook, and then we'll go through the data. So the best thing to do is go, wow, super freaky, it's kind of wild, let's monitor you and see what happens. I mean, have an orgasm again, whether, again, self-inflicted or partner participated, and see what happens, and keep a log. And if it's really something that seems to be recurrent, whether that's in 1 week or 1 year, you need to tell somebody. Don't suffer in silence. So it's okay to go, look, it's a little odd, especially on a first occurrence. Let's see where that goes. All right. Now that's our little quick disclosure. Let's get back with the main body of info. Okay, so I want to share this with you. So when I turned this into Mike, I said, hey, we're going to talk about sex seizures. He said, why? Because it's a thing. We got to educate on this. We had a patient who came in with it. He's like, wow, that is super weird. Are you going to make it weird? That was a question he asked. I'm like, hello? Of course not. No. But just because it's sex seizures, come on, man. We're going to do it. It's super important. And we're women's healthcare. This is a thing. So after he got over that is actually a reality issue for some, then he said, look, if you're making me put this thing together with something called sex seizures, then I'm going to put in Marvin Gaye into your interludes. I said, why would we do that? Hello, sexual healing, Marvin Gaye. And I'm like, oh my God. So here's my, I'm putting in the white towel here. I'm not responsible for that. Not responsible. It's not me. I'm innocent of that. But nonetheless, hey, who doesn't like a little Marvin Gaye? Because after all, if you're talking about some kind of sexual topic, what goes good with that outside of wine and maybe some cheese? A little Marvin Gaye. Look, let's be honest. Orgasm does some weird stuff to the body, all right? In the past, it was called the little death. Like the what? The little death. Like death. Yeah, that's terrible, isn't it? Le petit mort. I think I have an episode on that. I'm sure I do. It's somewhere in the archives. And that had to do with the potential, you know, mini fainting spells, a loss of consciousness, a little dissociation that happens after sexual release. So le petit mort actually can be traced back in medical literature, guys. Yikes, right? That was a term that was used in the mid-16th century. And it kind of hung out a little bit. It was kind of covert, not really overt, because sex in general wasn't talked about at that time. And then it was picked up again in the 18th and 19th centuries. And again, it referred to this temporary and potential brief loss of consciousness. And then you get into this other kind of notion that we talked about before, the coitus brevis epilepsia est, that sex is a mini seizure. And like, wow. I mean, and you know what? Without even knowing the biochemistry or the neuronal activity of orgasm at that time, the answer is, yeah. I mean, kind of. I mean, with orgasmic release, again, self-inflicted or partner participated, there's neuronal firing. I'm going to show you that evidence in just a minute. It's remarkable. And it can mimic seizure-like activity because of those neuronal firings, right? The involuntary muscle contraction, both skeletal muscle and then even smooth muscle, because you get pelvic floor contraction. The anal sphincter starts to contract. The pelvic floor, the superficial transverse perineal muscles in the female undergo spasm as well. The vagina goes through rhythmic contraction. It's fascinating. It really is. What the body can do. And remember that orgasm is not necessary for human reproduction. In the sense of the emotional release, you just need sperm. I mean, so ejaculation is one thing, and you'd figure ejaculation equal orgasm. Yeah, but yes and no, because orgasm is also this emotional, mental, neuronal activity, whereas ejaculation is the physical release. Because you can I'm not going to get into it, guys. We don't want to get into that much detail, but just like with animals, right? I mean, you can stimulate sperm and semen release without technically having an orgasm per se. You know, and then you get into this thing of semantics of, oh, it's climax versus orgasm. When is physical? When is the emotional? Guys, all to say is that orgasmic activity isn't just the physical contraction and the distortion that happens both with skeletal muscle and smooth muscle, but it also is the mental activity. And that's proven from a serotonin level to dopamine. I mean, the brain gets flooded with these chemicals quickly, including oxytocin flare. It's amazing. So yes, there's orgasmic activity, and then there's the physical stuff, which are obviously intimately tied. But it goes deeper than that, okay? But I find all of these terms that people have used in the past, even medical communities, like le petit mort, just so interesting, because without knowing the science back then, they were kind of onto something. Yes, it's biochemical. Yes, it's hormonal. Yes, it is social. And yes, it's neural. It's amazing. And now that we've said neural and made that connection, no pun intended, neural connection, get it? Let's talk about some of the brain imaging that's been done during orgasmic activity on volunteers. Did y'all get that? Yeah. Brain imaging that has been done on volunteers. Could you imagine turning that into your local IRB, your investigational review board? Hey, I want to have a study where people lie on an MR scanner. We put them into the magnet, and then we have them go to town on themselves or a partner. You know, if they can handle the magnetic clicking and the banging of the machine, and see what their brain does when they orgasm. Yeah, that would never work on our IRB.
Back off, man. I'm a scientist.
But somebody did it because it's been published. Yep, it's pretty much science. So let's cover that next. I'm just amazed at some of the creativity of some researchers, clinicians to figure out info, because this was kind of a neat, almost a little creepy study. I mean, I don't have it in me to do this kind of proposal, but I'm glad they did. In 2017, researchers published their finding on a total of 10 women. So let's be clear, this isn't hundreds, because that'd be weird. It's 10, okay? But if you see a pattern, then you see some kind of pattern. So this was an N of 10 who experienced orgasm, quote, elicited by self or partner-induced genital stimulation, end quote. Now here's the kicker. In the functional MRI scanner. Oh, how romantic. Like, hey, honey, I've got a job for you. What are you doing tonight at 5 p.m.? We got a date in the MRI scanner. Whatever. The short of it is, this thing was kind of cool because it worked. They found that brain activity, neuronal firing, actually started lighting up in the functional MRI images of the brain leading up to orgasm, and then it peaked at orgasm. So if you can think of the brain, right, think of a little 3D picture of the brain, you're looking at a functional MRI, and they're leading up, and they're about to have orgasmic release, and during that peak, boom, it's like little firework transmissions all over the brain. What? It's incredible. Now, the catch was there wasn't just like one area. I mean, things were firing in different parts of the brain. That included sensory, motor, reward centers of the brain. It had a frontal cortex, brainstem regions, including areas like the amygdala. Wow. I mean, are you kidding me? How fantastic was that? And in some patients, even the cerebellum. That's how, you know, you can get like a little lightheaded, a little dizzy. Some of that is respiratory, but some of that is neuronal firing. So all to say is they didn't come up with like the orgasmic neuronal firing pattern. Like this is what happens and it goes A to B and then B to C. It just showed neuronal firing overall in different parts of the brain. Proving, of course, that this isn't just hormonal. This isn't just chemical. This is actually neuronal. Well, I guess it's chemical because it's neurochemical in terms of the transmitters. But I mean, you can actually see these communications and these things firing throughout the brain. This was published in the journal, again, Sexual Medicine. It first came out in 2017 as an EPUB and then formally came out in 2018. Just remarkable study. All right, everyone. So we've just covered that. Yes, obviously stuff is happening in the brain. Super cool. And for the remainder of the episode, remember, we just want to lay the stage correctly that we're going to talk about this in the epilepsy / seizure naive patient. All right. No past history of seizures, not in a known epileptic individual. And it's true, yes, just to acknowledge that these poor epileptic patients, I mean, male or female, I mean, what a stress that is, right? I mean, it interferes with driving unless you're deemed in remission. And some patients with epilepsy have told me, look, even when I have a good intimate life, sexual life, but sometimes I'm kind of worried that, you know, is this thing going to trigger one? This is a real fear for a lot of people living with epilepsy. So just have that empathy and ask them. We have patients on anti-epileptic medication for seizures. You ask, do you have any concerns? Is this a thing? Does this interfere with your sexual intimacy? Because this is something that really is not discussed very often, and it should. Now, thankfully, according to the data, we can reassure patients that for the majority of epileptics, there really is no known trigger of that sexual activity specifically for seizures, all right? Now, this is also controversial. We're going to address that in a minute because sex and or orgasm has not been traditionally recognized as one of the reflex triggers for seizure in patients with epilepsy, according to the International League Against Epilepsy. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. And there's reasons for that. And I'll tell you that in a minute. But thankfully, the majority of cases, it does not seem that even those who are prone to seizures, who have epilepsy, it seems that orgasmic activity, even with the brain firing the way it does, it for the almost universal, but there are some out there, obviously, because that's the whole purpose of this episode, it does not lead to a seizure, all right? Can it happen? Absolutely. However, it's pretty rare. So we can talk to those patients who have known epilepsy that, you know, orgasmic activity should be fine, and that shouldn't necessarily by itself precipitate an epileptic seizure. So, but we're not talking about those with epilepsy in this episode. And like in our patient that we presented in our little case snapshot, we're talking about those that are seizure naive. As we're talking about seizures, I think it's important to just briefly, don't worry about it, we're not going to stay here for very long, but it's important to realize the kinds of seizure activity that's out there, okay? Because we take these words for granted, even like with epilepsy, that's a type of tonic-clonic seizure, but then we forget what that actually means, right? So it's very easy in general, and this is according to the CDC, there's just two big buckets of seizure activity, all right? That's it. You either generalized onset or your focal onset, all right? So generalized or focal. Generalized onset are the kinds of seizure activity that involve both the right and the left sides of the brain, okay? These seizures usually last up to a few minutes. So the other ones that are focal that we're about to talk about next, which is the other category, are much briefer, all right? So two main categories, general and focal. And in the general camp, there's three main types. There's the traditional tonic-clonic. There's the absence seizure, where the patient can kind of look like they're staring out or have rapid blinking episodes. That's called an absence seizure. Or they can be an atonic seizure, where it's just the exact opposite. Rather than big muscle contractions and tetanic kind of presentation, they actually go very limp and the patient just falls to the ground. The boom, they just fall out, okay? So tonic-clonic, absence, and then atonic. And then there's the focal type of seizures, and there's three there as well. There is simple focal. That means that it only starts in one part of the brain and has minimal activity, like a person twitches or they can have a weird sensation or even small weird smells and tastes. That's a kind of a focal seizure, all right? And I've seen that. I used to have a patient who had this weird aura of odors. And it's like, do you smell it? Do you not smell it? And they just kind of fade out a little bit. Very bizarre. That's a simple focal. And then there's complex focal. These can happen just like a simple focal, but afterwards the patient feels kind of dazed. They're kind of confused. They're kind of out of it, okay? And they may not be able to answer questions right after the seizure. So they're almost post-ictal, okay? So simple focal, stuff happens, but they're with it. Complex focal is that, but they're now kind of dazed, a little bit out of it. That's complex focal. And then there is the secondary generalized, where it starts kind of focal and then goes, more to a tonic-clonic type of picture, all right? And actually, some people say that eclampsia is kind of a generalized secondary seizure because in a lot of patients, it actually doesn't start with tonic-clonic spasm. It actually starts in the face with this weird kind of twitching, and then comes the body arcing, the back arch and the arms and the legs go into their spasm, all right? But in general, epilepsy, you always give it the highest type of activity for a seizure, and so it is tonic-clonic, all right? So there's three kinds of generalized seizure, and then there's three kinds of focal seizures. And how it relates to what we're talking about here is that sexual seizures, it typically are considered to be complex focal, okay? They're smaller activity, but then they do have a an episode of dissociation afterwards, even though patients can do whatever they do with their brain. And just because they have one type of seizure activity doesn't exclude another type, all right? It's not like the body says, hey, this belongs to simple focal, and that's all we're doing. And that's our program, guys. No. Patients can have more than one kind of presentation in one setting or during a lifetime. All right, let's get to it. So is there a link between orgasm and seizure? Yes, there definitely is, but it's complicated. Yeah, it's complicated. In rare cases, an association between sex and seizures can exist, especially in those that have temporal lobe propensity, all right? So most of the data shows that this is a right temporal lobe misfire, although, you know, anything can happen in the brain, but based on the data, it looks like coital-related seizure activity, which is rare, let's just say that again, but when it does happen and you find an abnormality on EEG, it tends to be in the right lobe of the brain, okay? And there's a variety of different conditions that can go with that, that can be caused by a brain mass. It can be caused by right temporal lobe epilepsy. It can be caused by a traumatic brain injury. Or if there was some kind of biopsy or other procedure or trauma that caused some kind of scarring in that area that causes neuronal misfiring and lowers the seizure threshold, that could do it as well, okay? And of course, in some, there's no true physical abnormality. They're just, the wiring is just a little bit off, and that extra gush of neurotransmitters and hormones can lead the patient to have, can trigger the patient to have a seizure, okay? But again, controversial. So let's say it again, that this is rare to have seizure from orgasm, but it was recorded for the first time in 1960. That was done by two people, all right? Honig and Hamilton, who reported the case in a 23-year-old woman. Now, notice it's a woman because women are more likely to have this condition, just like they're more likely to have epilepsy in general. Who gets migraines more, one or the other? It's typically women, right? Just the way it is, and it sucks, but that's the reality of it. And then in 2006, six patients were described with different epileptic syndromes who experienced seizures after sexual intercourse and orgasm. So it is a thing, okay? So this is reported, it is out there. But notice these are small cases. We're talking about an N of six in that 2006 publication. So not a lot of information. But when something can trigger a seizure, right, that's called a reflex stimulus. And we all get that the most common reflex stimuli are what? The flashing lights, loud sounds, certain kind of odors. Those are the things that we typically think as the stimulus for a seizure. And here's why it's controversial, because according to an international society called the ILAE, that is the International League Against Epilepsy, traditionally, when they list triggering events, reflex events that can trigger a seizure, orgasm or sex is not on that list. All right. Traditionally, it's been left off. And here's why. And the reason is, when you take a look at the data and these case reports, when people describe this seizure-like activity, it can happen within a few seconds after orgasm. Now, that makes sense, right? Because it's the firing and then it happens. But in some case reports, it happens 2 hours after orgasm. So that link doesn't make any sense. Because if it's going to happen because of neuronal misfire, at the peak of sexual activity, at orgasm, is going to happen very close in time from the offending trigger. And that's why the ILAE says, how is it that it happens 2 hours after orgasm? It doesn't make sense as a true trigger. Maybe there's other things involved. And of course, there are other things involved. There's the possibility of hyperventilation. We'll talk about that, because not only is that a CO2-driven tetanic response of the body that can look like a seizure, but hyperventilation in and of itself, because of the metabolic alkalosis, the respiratory alkalosis that causes, can actually alter some very sensitive neurons in the brain. And that's also been shown. I'll give you that data in a minute. So the point is that ILAE, the International League Against Epilepsy, says there's too many factors here. We're not sure. Hyperventilation could be that. It just could be a really funky orgasm. Let's call it what it is. It could be a true trigger, but there's too many factors in there to make it clear. So they don't call that one of the reflex stimuli. That's why we said it's controversial. But obviously, I mean, there are these reports out there. I mean, we looked them up and they're all isolated. They're all these little sporadic things. And the majority, of course, as we've already stated, who is afflicted? It's the women. All right. Now, we were able to find two case reports, two. Now, there could be more, but if you don't write it up in the literature, we're not going to know. That's why, as we tell the medical students and the residents, if you see something funky and out there, put it in print, because who knows who else may have had this. So all to say, we did find two case reports that described these events in male patients. One was in a 36-year-old male, and the other was in a 42-year-old male. The 36-year-old patient's case report was published in 2015, and then the 42-year-old patient had that report published in 2020, all right? And I do want to go through these here in a minute, because it's, think about if you're the patient, put yourself in the patient's situation, and you're like, what is happening? I mean, it's weird. Not just in this case is it weird because it happened that they were men, but remember what we said earlier, that in the majority of the cases, coital-related seizures, sex seizures, tend to be complex focal. But both of these reports in males actually were tonic-clonic. Wow. By the way, what a buzzkill, right? I mean, if you're having sex with your partner and he has orgasm and then, boom, goes into a tonic-clonic seizure, wow. I mean, if you're that partner seeing that male go through that convulsion, you got two things. The first thought is, oh my gosh, what did I do to this man? What is happening? Is he dying? Let's be honest. And the second is, wow, I must be really good. I mean, this is, I don't know, was that inappropriate? I'm just saying, it's weird. What do you do in that situation? Super freaky. So let's talk about the 36-year-old male first. And then briefly touch on the 2020, even though I know we're in women's health and we're focusing on the female population. But this is really just so intriguing because it makes the point here that people can do different things. There are different presentations. They're not all women. They're not all complex focal. And sometimes the workup is not super helpful. So let me explain this to you, all right? So in the first case, the case of the 2015 paper. This was the 36-year-old male. This was a male who had sex and had ejaculation and then immediately had loss of consciousness with a few minutes of tonic-clonic movement. Yikes. All right. So again, wow. So this patient's neurological exam when he went for eval was normal. Short of it is he had no head trauma, not on any meds, not taking any drugs, had a brain scan, a CT scan, and MRI that showed no structural abnormalities. Chemistries were normal. And so, like, look, I don't find anything. Now, let's just stop there for a minute. And the workup also included, by the way, an electroencephalogram, an EEG, and it was normal. But of course it's going to be normal. I mean, the only time that EEGs are helpful is if you do it under observation during an attack, which is what I would have recommended. Hey, we're going to put you in a sleep study room, connect you to the EEG machines, and you got to knock one out. I mean, you got to take one for the team, try to have an orgasm or a hyperventilate under control situation so we can see what happens. And even then, there's no guarantee that it's going to happen. See how difficult this is? So all to say, this 36-year-old male had absolutely negative workup, nothing found. All right. So he's like, well, I definitely don't want that to happen again. So after shared decision making, they put the patient on a variety of medications, including Dilantin, and it didn't help. Then they gave a clobetazam, which is a benzo, for heaven's sakes. And then that and Keppra seemed to do the trick. Just incredible. And it just showed that it took a variety of medications to get this controlled. And yes, it worked. He was able to have sexual activity with orgasm without seizure activity on medication. Now, super weird. The question is, well, is that a postcoital seizure for sure? Remember, the no past history. Okay, this is the only time this happened. Was this psychogenic called PNS? We're going to talk about that in a minute. PNES. PNES. Not penis. PNES. PNES, for heaven's sakes. But penis, it does kind of sound like penis as we're talking about sexual things. Oh my goodness. PNES stands for psychogenic non-epileptic seizures, right? PNES, that is an actual term. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And who knows? I mean, was this patient better because of a placebo effect? Whatever. Who knows? But the main thing is his quality of life improved. Same situation, almost identical in the 2020 publication that described the 42-year-old. Similar deal, no past history. Had orgasm and then had this weird tonic-clonic seizure. Completely negative workup, including head imaging and EEG. And then ended up being controlled on clobetazam again as a benzo and Keppra. Wow. So you see how, even though you read that these are typically complex focal, no, this happened as general tonic-clonic. And then you read it happens only in females. No, this happened in males. You read, oh, there's typical epileptic foci seen on EEG. Well, only if they have a seizure during the evaluation. So it's very complicated. Remember what I said, guys? It's complicated. Okay, so now that we've covered that, orgasm, then seizure, what about the reverse? Is it possible that seizure can lead to orgasm? That's the reverse situation. Yeah, that's a thing too. Think about how distressing that is. Now, if you remember back in our podcast archive, we covered a related neurological female sexual affliction called PGAD, PGAD. Okay, that's persistent genital arousal disorder. That's also known as genital pelvic dysesthesia. That was based on another real patient, a chief complaint and encounter that we had in the clinic that led to that episode. So yes, there are weird stuff out there. Now, in this case, this genital pelvic dysesthesia was related to a spinal cord issue, but it can also occur more centrally in the brain, right? It doesn't have to be in the spine. It could, anything that misfires within the CNS can cause weird sexual sensation. So this patient for that condition, persistent genital arousal disorder, came in with going, look, I've never talked to anybody about this. I just have to tell you that this is happening and I don't know what it is. And if I feel swollen, I feel like I'm about to have an orgasm. But even if I do that, because I think sometimes I just need to have it and be done, the symptom doesn't go away. And sometimes I can be in class and boom, this thing just happens. And she thought she was going nuts, or she thought she was hypersexual, right? And, well, you know, being hypersexual is one thing. It's not related to this. In this case, this was a true neurological condition. You got to go back and listen to that, okay? It was called persistent genital arousal disorder. And I think, I don't want to say when we did it because I don't have it up on my sheet, but I think it was in August, okay, August of this year. Super interesting. So these things are real. The short of it is, yes, just like orgasm can trigger seizures, predominantly in the right temporal lobe, and those that are susceptible, even though it's rare, it can happen in naive seizure patients or in those with epilepsy. The reverse is also true. Those who have seizures can have this weird orgasmic type of side effect and presentation based on where their epileptic focus is in the brain. That is very well published. Again, not very common, but it is out there. And even apart from orgasms, listen to this, guys. There are also some patients who have seizure-like activity with sexual behaviors or mimicking. Like they'll gyrate with their hips, right? They'll have some thrusting behaviors. Some have some kind of rubbing behaviors in the genital area. And they're not doing it. It's like their body is kind of is triggering these muscles to do that. That actually is a medical term. That's called sexual automatism, like automatics, sexual automatism, and it is a thing. Again, not super common, but it is very well documented in medical literature and in the epileptic literature that these sexual seizure manifestations are real. But again, not your typical kind of presentation. So can orgasm cause seizure? Yes, but it's complicated. And we'll give you those other reasons that we've already mentioned a little bit more in detail in just a minute, like hyperventilation. And seizures can also cause orgasmic type of symptoms. So weird, okay? So all to say, it works both ways. It's a two-way street. And isn't the brain just amazing? As we get ready to end, let's talk about the potential confounding factors here with sex, orgasm, and seizure-like activity. So let's all realize that orgasmic muscular contractions may look kind of funky, look a little weird, and can mimic seizure activity based on how aggressive they are, and how eccentric the person is, I guess, during orgasmic activity. And hyperventilation in and of itself can trigger seizures because of its metabolic aspect with CO2 drop and its respiratory and metabolic alkalosis. And it's also neurological. There's actually publications out of neuroscience literature that hyperventilation and the tetanic contraction isn't just an issue of muscular spasticity, but it actually can hit some very sensitive neurons in the brain that are pH sensitive and can actually trigger seizure-like activity, all right? So you've got the muscular contraction with the changes in calcium, with the CO2 drops, and then you have true neurological activity that the pH-sensitive neurons can actually fire and actually trigger a seizure, all right? So there's two things going on. Not all hyperventilation, tetanic contraction is CO2-driven, and calcium, some of that may be actually CNS-driven in the brain. That was published in 2022, where authors actually caused respiratory alkalosis, and it caused these spike wave discharges in seizure-prone rats, those poor little rats. But they showed it. Hey, this is actually a real thing. So it's, again, see how complicated that is? So if hyperventilation happens with sexual activity, and that's one of the things to ask these patients. Hey, when you're having an orgasm, I know this is weird. Were you breathing like super fast? Because you've got to control that. And that's part of sensate focus. That's part of biofeedback, knowing your body. And you can actually control that so it doesn't happen if hyperventilation was a factor. Isn't that remarkable? And so outside of just some orgasmic activity looks kind of spastic and seizure-ish, and they're not, and the hyperventilation issue, you've got to consider the possibility, as we wrap this up, of psychogenic non-epileptic seizures, or PNES, okay? Now, super difficult for the to address with a patient, because you don't want to tell them this is all in your mental state, because they may not even be aware of that. Remember that this is not voluntary. If it is psychogenic, this is something that they're not aware of. It is a type of conversion reaction that used to be called in DSM-4 somatoform disorders, right? We don't call it that anymore. Now they're called somatic symptom disorders in the DM-5. And this can also present just with conversion kind of symptoms, or can also be dissociative if they kind of, zonk out for a minute. Now, I'm going to be very clear. I am not saying that patients who present with seizure-like activity after orgasm, it's all in their head. I'm not saying it's all psychogenic at all. But I am saying very clearly that some of it could be, okay? This is why it's really important to bring a patient back, have dedicated time, block, that 15, 20-minute visit and say, hey, let's talk about some things that we got to be very open with, okay? Any past trauma, any sexual assault, what has happened? Tell me about your past sexual relationships. And see if there's anything there. And there may not be, or they may not realize that there have been because they've blocked it out. You see how complicated this is. Now, they still need a formal workup, okay? If this thing is a real problem, in line with asking them these difficult questions, you do need to still order, potentially a head MRI, do chemistries, make sure it's not drug-induced, and never let go of that possibility that maybe this is PNES, okay? Psychogenic, non-epileptic seizure activity. There is a big researcher that has done a lot of work with this. This is Ben Battis, and I'll put his link to one of his publications, of course, in our reference page. Super interesting stuff. And according to the Ben Battis documents and studies, he says that about 25% of people who have been diagnosed with epilepsy in the past, 25%, this is according to this author, who don't respond to drug therapy, that's the catch, right? So previous history of epilepsy and they're not responding to drug therapy can actually be found to have PNES. When you actually sit them down, talk to them about it, and go through the appropriate treatment for this, which is either psychotherapy and CBD by itself, with or without, in some studies, a serotonin reuptake inhibitors that seems to help with this condition as well. But mainly this is cognitive behavioral therapy, okay? And yes, give them an EEG and try to tell them, look, talk to the neurologist, have an open conversation with the neurology, because nothing makes neurology happier than talking about sexual things. So they love it, okay? that's sarcasm, because they're like, oh my God, like fingers in the ear. Like, I don't want to hear it. Well, you have to hear it, because you seizures is what you do. And sometimes seizures and sex could be an issue. And I don't mean that like for everybody. I just know the neurologist that I used to work with is like, oh, you're the gynecologist. You do the sex things. I do the seizure thing. But we have to meet in the middle. I mean, come on, man. You can't just ignore this. And to be clear, that friend of mine who was in neurology in Dallas just didn't believe that sex seizures were a distinct thing. He thought they were all psychosomatic, which is unfortunate because they're not. I mean, sometimes now we know, have this data, that even though it's complicated, there is absolutely a potential tie-in. So they cannot be just discarded as not real. That's not a real trigger, when absolutely we know that there's fireworks in the brain with orgasmic activity. Okay. All right. So having said that, these patients are best treated if it is PNES, PNES, then they need cognitive behavioral therapy, and serotonin reuptake inhibitors seem to be effective in these patients. So you see how complicated this is? So believe them. Don't discard them. Don't just write them off as, ah, that was just a wicked orgasm and good for you. No. Wait a minute. If it's causing distress and it's freaking people out when you have sex, you probably need to be investigated for that. So as we wrap this up, what's the question? Can orgasm give you a seizure? Yeah, for sure. But it's complicated. So it's part of us as women's healthcare providers, as physicians, as scientists, is to do our due diligence, put in the work. It's going to take work to try to figure this out and not just throw medicine at people. There's a time for that, but just figure out what else is going on. Was it isolated? How severe is this impacting the relationship? I personally would not start a patient who is seizure naive on medication just after one occurrence. That's way overkill. But I would absolutely bring them back, do a more detailed history, get blood work, possibly even get a head MRI if I'm really worried about it, if there's any other flags. But you see how complicated and how multi-layered this evaluation is. So there you go. Can orgasm give me a seizure? Yeah, it can, but it's complicated. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. I hope you found this interesting. I think this is fascinating. And as always, it's not esoteric or out there. We had a patient with this very complaint. So as always, we're thankful for you. We're glad you're part of our podcast community. And we'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.